Welcome to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. My name is Michael Eriksson, and today I'm starting a new series on the podcast, specifically for people who are just getting into triathlon or even just thinking about it. It's creatively named Beginner Series, and this will be episode one. What we'll do today is we'll basically discuss an introduction to triathlon and also an introduction to this series itself. Very, very long-time listeners might remember that I actually did run a podcast series that I called Beginner Tips back in 2018. That was 37 episodes long, or short, because the episodes themselves were short, I think usually 10 to 20 minutes. And this will essentially be a completely new and updated version of that series that serves both to update and improve on the actual content from that time, because 7 years have passed. And secondly, it will be to get this content out to more people, and specifically to more beginners, as the listeners from 2018 who were beginners back then are certainly not beginners anymore. And the beginners of today are unlikely to go back and find podcast episodes from 2018, or if they do find them, probably are unlikely to listen to them. So hopefully this will be a fresh start and we'll get in front of a lot of people. And I hope that if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you can help it be that way by sharing it to people that might be interested. A note to the more experienced listeners who might not be the target audience for these episodes, still share, as I just mentioned, but also I will be publishing other episodes of the usual kind here on the podcast alongside this series. So there'll be plenty of content for you as well. It won't necessarily be 20 episodes of just beginner tips going forward here for the next little while. There will be other stuff coming out in parallel. Just quickly before we continue with this episode, a big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel Hydration. They create carbohydrate products like gels, drink mix and shoes, and electrolyte products. As this is a beginner series episode, we'll just explain the basics of these products at a very high level. Carbohydrate is the main fuel source you'll be using in a racing situation and also in intense training. And you have it in limited supply in your body. So depending on how long you'll be out on the race course for, you may need to supplement with some additional carbohydrate that can be taken up and used quickly and effectively by the muscles. So gels and drink mixes are great for this. Electrolytes are used to replace the salt that you lose when you sweat, because if you lose too much salt, your muscle function may be impaired, not permanently, of course, but temporarily during the race, or you may suffer from cramps. A much rarer and much more severe situation is if you overhydrate with pure water and you lose a lot of salt in your sweat, then you could suffer from something called hyponatremia. So on hot days when you'll be needing to hydrate a lot, but will also lose a lot of sweat, avoiding hyponatremia is another main reason to use electrolytes in your fluids. As a TTS listener, you can get 15% off your first order of 2025 by using the code TTS25 on precisionfuelhydration.com. Now, let's get on with the show and do a brief introduction to this beginner series. If you're a regular listener of the show, you'll know that I usually dive pretty deep into performance topics, training theory, intermediate to advanced concepts. But at the same time, I also get plenty of emails and messages from people who are completely new to the sport or just thinking about getting into it. So a lot of that regular content that I do here is not the most relevant for a segment of the listeners that I have that are beginners. And we'll try to correct this here. We're going back to basics. We won't be doing jargon without explanation. There won't be any assumptions about what you already know. We will just focus on straightforward, practical information to help you get started in triathlon. So over the coming episodes, we'll cover everything from selecting your first race to basic training principles, from essential gear to race day execution. And I'll just rattle off the episodes that I have planned for now. It's likely that one or a few more topics will appear that I haven't even thought about yet on this list. But on this list now, I have 20 episodes. So they are 1. Introduction to triathlon. 2. Selecting your first race. 3. Gear and equipment. 4. Training structure and key principles. 5. Beginner mistakes to avoid. 6. Swimming. 7. Biking. 8. Running. 9. Open water swimming. 10. Running off the bike. 11. Race day preparation and checklist. 12. Race day execution. 13. Strength training. 14. Injury prevention. 15. Nutrition hydration. 16. Training zones, FTP, VO2 max and jargon. 17. Life, work, triathlon balance. 18. Motivation and psychology. 19. Coaching, training plans, or DIY training. 20. The journey continues. So there you have it. That's a list of topics. If you're an experienced triathlete and you're still listening to this, I hope and think that there will also be useful information for you in this list of episodes. It can be helpful for you to get a bit back to basics, get some repetition of the fundamentals. Plus, you probably know someone who's thinking about trying a triathlon, and you will get information that you can share with them, whether you share the episodes directly or you just pass on the information. But I, of course, do encourage you to share the episodes and the podcast with anybody who is interested. So now that I've introduced the beginner series itself, let me introduce you to triathlon. And let's start with the obvious question, what exactly is triathlon? At its most basic, triathlon is an endurance event that combines three disciplines, swimming, cycling, and running, and 99% of the time it is in that order. As triathlon combines several sports or several disciplines, it is referred to as multisport. And you do the swim, bike, and run legs one after the other without stopping the clock between each sport. So you swim first, then you immediately transition to the bike, and then you transition to the run. And the clock starts when you start the swim, and it finishes when you finish the run. That's it. Now, there are different distances in triathlon, and this is where it can get a bit confusing. And also, it can be a bit intimidating for beginners, because you might only have heard about Ironman triathlon and associate triathlon with an incredibly long and extreme challenge, but this is far from the only distance that exists in triathlon. So going from shorter to longer, the most common distances in triathlon are first super sprint distance, which is a 300 meter swim usually, 5 to 8 kilometers of biking, and 1.5 to 2 kilometers of running, or in imperial units, that would be 330 yards, 3 to 5 miles cycling, and 0.9 to 1.2 miles running. 330 yards was swimming, to be clear. And this is the distance that is raced in the mixed relay in the Olympics. It's a bit more uncommon than the other distances we'll get to in amateur events, but it does exist, or variations of it. So you might see it, and it's a really good, really fun distance. So I recommend you do it. Sprint distance then is a very classic distance, 750 meters of swimming, 20 kilometers of biking, and 5 kilometers of running, or about 820 yards of swimming, 12 miles of cycling, and 3 miles of running. This is a great distance to start out with for most people, especially if you don't have a super sprint distance locally. Most amateurs take 1 to 2 hours to finish the sprint distance. Then we have the Olympic distance, also known as standard distance. This is double the sprint distance, so it's a 1.5 kilometer swim, a 40 kilometer bike, and a 10 kilometer run, or in imperial units, 1,640 yards swimming, 25 miles of cycling, and 6 miles of running. This is the distance that is raced as the individual event at the Olympic Games, which is the pinnacle of the sport, as it extends beyond just the triathlon bubble. And the Olympic distance, most amateurs finish this distance in between 2 to 4 hours. Then we move up to the middle distance, also known as half distance or half Ironman or half iron distance or 70.3. So this is exactly half the distance of a full Ironman or full iron distance, and it equates to 70.3 miles total, which is why you hear a lot of people talk about 70.3, and including myself, for this distance. 70.3 is Ironman as a corporation and event organizers, they have trademarked IM713, maybe Ironman 713, as their name for this distance. But plenty of organizers use the exact same distance and then end up calling it half distance, middle distance, or one of those other varieties that I mentioned. So this consists of a 1.9 kilometer swim, a 90 kilometer bike, and a 21.1 kilometer run. So that is a half marathon. In imperial units, that is 1.2 miles of swimming, 56 miles of biking, and 13.1 miles of running. And most amateurs finish the half distance in 4 to 8 hours. And then finally, we have the Ironman, iron distance, or full distance triathlon. And yeah, this is the legendary full Ironman. Again, Ironman as a company has trademarked the use of that term of Ironman as it pertains to prescribe it, to describing an actual triathlon distance. So other race organizers use terms like full distance, iron distance, long distance, you'll see. And this is a 3.8 kilometer swim, 180 kilometer bike, and 42.2 kilometer run, which is a full marathon. Or in miles, 2.4 miles of swimming, 112 miles of biking, and 26.2 miles of running. and most amateurs finish this in 8 to 17 hours. One important thing to understand about triathlon distances is that they're not as standardized as you might expect from some sports. While these are target distances, and many races do strive to get to these distances because they know that people like to compare times and so on, races actually will vary quite a bit. And by that, I mean they can be several kilometers short or long, especially on the bike, and at least several hundred meters short or long on the run and the swim. Usually it is more short than long, to be clear. So it's quite rare that you would have something that is that you think is a, let's say, a half distance, and it ends up being 5 kilometers longer on the bike, but you could well have something that is 5 kilometers shorter. And this usually this is because of just the course layout that makes sense for the venue where the race is. So race organizers aren't too fussed if it's a bit short, especially if it just makes more sense to have the course run the way it is laid out instead of doing some weird kind of extra loop that might add to the exact distance, but wouldn't really make sense or maybe not be safe even. So this is in stark contrast to especially road running and marathon running, where every certified course is exactly the right distance. So we know that a marathon is 42,195 meters. Triathlon courses never ratify the distances this way. And it's even in the World Triathlon rules, you have built-in tolerances for the distances of certain percentages that vary based on the actual distance. And this means that you shouldn't get too hung up on comparing your times between different races the way that you might do with running times. Of course, also because courses are very different in terms of hills and or not hills. Actually, I read in the World Triathlon, which is the triathlon governing body, rules just today when preparing for this episode, that they say that middle and long distance races, or middle and half and full distance races, the bike course should be hilly. It is in the World Triathlon rules. I had never seen that, but you can go and check that if you're interested. That's not usually the case, to be fair. But they do say that the distance can vary on the bike with up to 5%. So 5% of 90 kilometers would be almost 5 kilometers, 4 point something kilometers, or almost 3 miles. So it could be almost 3 miles short or long, and it would still be correctly able to label itself as a middle distance or half distance race in that example. Anyway, there are also many events that are nowhere close to any of these standard distances, but they are completely based on what makes sense for the venue itself. So these special distances are often the best events and courses because they don't let arbitrary distances dictate the course layout, but the course is planned to be the most interesting and best course that it can possibly be. And then the distance is simply a result of whatever that course is. And a great example would be something like the Alpe d'Huez Triathlon, where the bike is basically, it takes you from the end of the swim, and then you bike, and then you climb up the Alpe d'Huez, and then you run up there on the top. So something like that, they don't care about what the distance is. It's more about you need to get from the swim to the run, and you need to climb the Alpe d'Huez to, because that's just a cool climb to do. So there are plenty of races like this, and they're very cool, so you don't need to feel restricted by any kind of standardized distances that still reign dominant in triathlon, but there's lots more to triathlon than just that. A key thing to understand is that triathlon isn't just about being good at three different sports in isolation or separately. It's about managing the transitions between these three sports, not just in terms of being quick through transitions, but actually being able to bike well after swimming, being able to run well after biking and swimming. So pacing yourself across all the three disciplines, dealing with the unique challenges that come from doing them back to back to back with fatigue from the previous segments accumulating. So that's my introduction, brief introduction to triathlon. Who is triathlon for then? And this might be the most important section of this entire episode, because I think there are a lot of misconceptions about who can or cannot do a triathlon. I think that triathlon is absolutely not just for great athletes. It's not just for people who were swimmers or cyclists or runners first and want a new challenge. And it's definitely not just for people who have hours and hours to train every day or lots of time every week. Triathlon is for anyone who wants to challenge themselves, for anyone who enjoys variety in their training, and for anybody who is willing to put in consistent effort over time, but it hasn't to be a lot of effort in any one day or any one week. So just from personal anecdotal information. I coached complete beginners who couldn't swim 25 meters without stopping when they started, or people that haven't been on a bike since they were kids, people that thought that a 5-kilometer run might actually kill them. And many of these people have gone on to become lifelong athletes and complete Ironman distance races and absolutely love the sport, and it's now a lifestyle for them. But also, it doesn't have to become anything more than doing a couple of sprint distance races every summer because you have some good local races and you just enjoy doing that for a certain period of the year. So it's up to you to decide what you do with triathlon. It's not about getting it becoming all-encompassing, although it certainly can be in a positive way, and you should just avoid letting it become all-encompassing in a negative way. The beautiful thing about triathlon is that it meets you where you are. So if you can walk, you can start building towards the run. If you can get in a pool and float, then you can start building your swim. If you can ride a bike around a block, you can start building your cycling. What triathlon does require is patience and consistency. And because you're learning three sports instead of one, so there's just more to work on than if you just were to start working on one of the sports. But on the flip side, it also means that if you're having a rough patch in one of the sports, whether it is you're not improving as much, or you have a niggle or an injury, or you're just not enjoying it as much right now, you can still enjoy the other two or practice the other two and be improving in the other two. So this variety is an amazing thing about triathlon. Lots of people get into triathlon this way, myself included. I was doing road running and I got injured, and that's what got me into swimming and cycling and then triathlon. What else? Triathlon tends to attract people who like structure and goals, because the training is or can be very methodical. There's always something to work on. Their race day gives you a clear measurable outcome for all of your effort that you put in. But this should also not overshadow the fact that you can train and race on vibes and what you enjoy doing in training if you want to, at least for the shorter distances like sprint and Olympic distance, and especially once you have built up a bit of a base level of fitness. If you want to get to the half and full distance races, you might need a bit more structure to build up your fitness to the level that you can actually complete those races. But everything is within reason. So don't get me wrong, the structure, the process of getting faster, I find it amazing. It's what I love personally about triathlon. I enjoy that also as a coach very much. So there's nothing wrong with being attracted to that. And I do think that a lot of people in triathlon are attracted to that. But it's not the only way to do triathlon. You can, as I said, train and race a bit more on vibes. And it is just as good as being super structured, having all of these specific goals and trying to achieve them and tick them off and so on. That's the point I'm trying to make. In terms of demographics, so age-wise, triathlon has participants from young kids, at least where I live in Portugal. You can do triathlon when you're 8 or 9 years old. And you have people in their 80s doing Ironmans. I was just checking the Ironman World Championship results from last year in Kona, and the oldest age group there was 80 to 85. So I'd say the average age of participants in triathlon is probably higher than most other sports, partly because triathlon requires some life organization, and it can require some financial resources. We'll get to this in a bit, but mainly because people often discover triathlon later in life when they're looking for a new challenge. So I think that's the main thing, but there are other aspects. So there's absolutely no such thing as too late to get started in triathlon. In terms of men or women doing triathlon, the longer distances tend to be a bit more male dominant, and I think it's really important that we try to change that and try to have female role models in triathlon and give them better opportunities. So that's something that, you know, it's work in progress for a sport like triathlon, but running was the same 20, 30, 40 years ago. And running today is very much 50-50, I would say, if not even slightly more women doing running, at least up to half marathon distance, I believe. So hopefully that is something that can change with time. When you go down to the shorter distances, it evens out a lot more. And there are various hypotheses for why that is, and that's perhaps a discussion for another point. But suffice it to say that triathlon is for whatever your sex is, you can do triathlon, and whatever your age is, you can do triathlon. There are no obstacles to that. The time commitment in triathlon is scalable. So if you want to do an Ironman, of course, you're going to need significant training time, However, maybe not as much as you might imagine, or maybe that period of significant training time is shorter than you might imagine. You can narrow it down to a shorter period of preparation. If you want to just complete a sprint triathlon, you can absolutely prepare for that with, let's say, 45 to 60 minutes of training on 4 days, 5 days, 6 days a week for 6 to 8 weeks before the race. Even if you're starting from a low level of fitness, that is absolutely doable. Now let's discuss basic equipment. What do you actually need to get started in triathlon? This is an area where it's easy to get overwhelmed because there's a lot of gear available and it can seem like you need to buy everything before you can even begin. But the truth is that you need surprisingly little to get started. For swimming, you need a swimsuit, goggles, and a swim cap, which is normally mandatory in most pools. When you do a race, the race will usually give you a swim cap though, because that's their way of keeping track of everybody. And you, of course, for swimming, you need access to a pool or to open water, and that's it. So very few items, and none of them are expensive. If you race in cold water, then a wetsuit might be necessary. But I think for most beginners, what my recommendation is, if you have the opportunity, is to start out racing sprint and super sprint races in the summer months, when the water is warm enough and the distance is short enough that you really don't need a wetsuit. So I would wait with that and start with races that allow you to wait with that. Other equipment for swimming, like all the bags full of tools and equipment that you might have seen people bringing to the pool, you don't need when you're just starting out. And many pools even have some basic equipment available for everybody. This might be pool buoys, it might be fins and kickboards. It really depends on the pool. So you can't count on it, but it might be available. For cycling, obviously you need some kind of bike. And any bike that fits you reasonably well and is in good working condition will do for your first triathlon. So this could be a road bike if you have one, of course, that's great. But it could be mountain bike or even a regular city bike, commuter bike. It all works. You do need a helmet. That is mandatory for all triathlon races. And sunglasses are very helpful if it's a sunny day on race day. You definitely don't need a time trial bike / triathlon bike. We'll get to that. We can assume that they're the same thing for the purpose of this episode. I really don't recommend actually getting one for your first triathlon, even if you have more money than you know what to do with. It's better to wait until you know a bit more about what you want to get out of triathlon. You're a bit more comfortable on just doing the sport, doing swim, bike, run, because you actually make better purchasing decisions. You know a bit more about what you want and what you need. Don't rush that decision. Don't get a time trial bike right away. So that's definitely something to wait with. Cycling shoes that you clip into the bike pedals, you also don't need. You can very well use flat pedals and basic running shoes. But of course, if you come from a road cycling background, for example, or a mountain biking background where you're used to doing that, to riding with cycling shoes and clipping in, then of course that makes sense to do. And I recommend doing it. But it's not something that you need to get started with right away. For running, you need running shoes that fit well and feel comfortable. And that's it. Don't overthink this. Just try them out at a good running store and buy something nice, but don't buy the most expensive pairs of shoes either, because you probably don't need them. Beyond that, you'll want some basic sports clothing that's comfortable for the bike and the run. So for the training, definitely getting a pair of cycling shorts can make the cycling more comfortable. So cycling shorts have padding in them so that you feel more comfortable on the saddle. But you don't have to get, there are lots of expensive shorts. You don't have to get a pair of expensive shorts, get something basic. And for your first race, you do see a lot of people using just basic running shorts and a technical t-shirt on both the bike and the run legs, so you don't have to change between the bike and the run, of course. And that works very well. You can do this. You don't need a tri-suit, which is a kind of apparel, clothing equipment that you wear for both the bike and the run legs, and that has a bit of small padding that isn't hindering you in the water when you're swimming or when you're running, but you don't need that. Just go for regular running shorts and running t-shirt, or what some people do is put on their cycling shorts and a cycling jersey, and you can actually change in transition from that to your running short and t-shirt when you head on to the run. One piece of equipment that's actually really good to have even in your first triathlon is a race belt. A race belt helps you to display your race number, your bib number during the bike and run portions, where normally you're required to have the race number on your back when you're on the bike. and on your front when you're on the run leg. So you can, of course, use simple safety pins the way a lot of people do in running, for example. But then you would have to repin the number when you're transitioning from the bike to the run, from the back to the front. So race belt is just very practical because you can just rotate it half a lap around your body to put the number in front. It's not essential, absolutely not, but it's very cheap and very practical. So I do think that that makes sense. What you don't need when you start is anything else, anything that I've not mentioned, you probably don't need. If you listen to this podcast for a while, you've heard about 100 different pieces of equipment that can all be useful at a certain stage of your triathlon journey, whether that's a TT bike, a disc wheel, super shoes, tri suit, etc. All of that can come later if you decide that you want to get more serious about the sport, but you don't need them now. Remember that the goal here for us is, for me, is to remove barriers to getting started, because the barriers aren't so high, but they can seem high. So let's keep it simple. It's very possible to start with absolutely minimal equipment, and you can always upgrade so you get more into the sport and figure out what you actually need. That's the way I recommend doing it, because you end up wasting so much less money as well and time by then knowing a bit more about what you want and not wasting time and money on things that you actually didn't want in the end, but you were just rushing into buying a lot of stuff. Let's move on to basic terminology. Triathlon has a bit of its own lingo, and I will try to avoid a lot of the unnecessary jargon here on this series, but there are some terms that you'll hear constantly and that are worth understanding. We'll definitely have more as we go through the upcoming episodes, so this is by no means an exhaustive list, but a few key ones. So T1 and T2 refer to transition 1 and transition 2. So these are the transitions between segments in the race. Also, the physical transition areas, so they refer to both the actual act of the transition as well as the transition area itself. T1 is the transition from swim to bike, and T2 is the transition from bike to run. And in races, you'll have a designated spot in the transition area where you keep your gear, where you change from one sport to the next. And in most races, T1 and T2 are the exact same physical area, and you'll have the same spot both for transitioning from swim to bike as for bike to run. Some races have so-called split transitions, so they are separate physical areas, and you'll have your own spot in each of them. That's a bit more rare, but it happens. Drafting is another important term, and this means riding or swimming or running closely behind another athlete to reduce wind or water resistance. In swimming and running, drafting is always allowed in triathlon. In cycling, the drafting rules vary between different types of races and categories. In some races, it's allowed, and in others, it's not. And the rules about how close you can follow someone differ in the drafting, in the races, I should say, where drafting is not allowed. And most amateur races tend to be non-draft races. So that is, drafting is not allowed, as opposed to draft legal races, which you see more on the elite side of racing. However, several countries, especially in Europe, especially in Central and Southern Europe, you do have draft legal races also for amateurs. Road bike and TT bike. So a road bike is the bike that you'll see in most bike races like the Tour de France, except for the time trial stages. It's the bike where people race on in tightly packed groups, or they go out on group rides, what most road cyclists use in their training out on the roads. They're very versatile. You're always allowed to use a road bike in any triathlon. And TT bikes, on the other hand, are made for time trialing. So time trialing meaning race against the clock. You start on your own. The next person starts 1 minute behind you if it's a pure cycling race, or 2 minutes or 30 seconds. So that is a race against the clock. That is a time trial. And in non-draft triathlon races, you're allowed to use time trial bikes. You'll often hear the term triathlon bike and time trial bike used interchangeably. And we won't get into the very small differences or nuances here. There are some differences or nuances, but that's unimportant now. But these bikes, time trial bikes, are used to put you in a more aerodynamic position, so they're built to go as fast as possible. But as I said, they're only allowed in non-draft races, which, however, is most amateur races. So with these bikes, you cannot ride straight behind another competitor in a race. You have to keep the drafting distance, which varies a bit depending on the race, but in a lot of instances, it will be you have to keep 10 meters between your front wheel and the next competitor's back wheel on the road. But anyway, these time trial bikes are much more specialized and expensive, and I generally think most beginners should wait at least a year, but 2 years of waiting might be even better before it's worth it to get a TT bike. However, you can get a road bike much sooner than that. That's what I would recommend. Get into triathlon on whatever bike you have around. It doesn't have to be a road bike or a triathlon bike, whatever you have or can borrow. But then if you get hooked, you do a couple of races and you really like it, then get a road bike as your first bike, because that's a bike that you will have so much use for. You can go on group rides. You can go on training camps. It's just a fun bike to ride, funner than a TT bike. I think 90% of people would agree with that. And then after 1 or 2 years of racing on the road bike, you can, if you want to get a TT bike, if you feel that, yeah, you want to take the next step, get faster on the bike, a TT bike will help you get faster. Start out with, I think you need to get comfortable on the road bike first. It will also help you get the most out of your time trial bike when you learn to ride well on a TT bike first. Tri-suit is a piece of equipment, clothing. It's usually one piece, but can be two piece. It's a piece of clothing that you can wear for all three disciplines throughout the race. So it's a bit of like a combination of a swimsuit and cycling shorts with padding that's comfortable for cycling, but not so thick that it feels bulky while swimming or running. And many triathletes wear a tri-suit for the entire race. So then you don't have to change clothes in transition. If you use a wetsuit in the swim, you just remove your wetsuit and you have your tri-suit underneath it. And then you use the tri-suit for the bike and for the run, and there's no change of clothes needed. It's absolutely not essential when you're starting out. You can wear a t-shirt and running shorts under your wetsuit and do the same thing. And that works out just fine. A brick workout is a training session where you do two disciplines back to back, most commonly a bike followed by a run. And it can also be a swim followed by a bike, but it's a bit more logistically challenging, so you don't see it that often. It could even be a multi-brick workout, so something like a bike run combination. And basically, the purpose of brick workouts is to help you practice the feeling of transitioning between the sports that you're practicing. Age group. Most triathlons will organize participants in an event into age groups. So for the competitively minded, you can compare yourself with people of similar age to you. So for example, you might be in the female 30 to 34 age group or the male 55 to 59 age group. And in the results sheet of a race, you will see not just how you place overall, but also how you place within your age group. And for a lot of people, that's basically the motivation, is to see how far up you can get in your age group. Many race organizations also have their own world championships that you can qualify for. Ironman, of course, being the biggest one, the Ironman World Championships, the 7x3 World Championships. So there's also the sprint and Olympic distance age group World Championships. So there's lots of things going on there within the age groups. And so that's a term that is used a lot in triathlon. Only a few terms left here to deal with. Swim starts. We have three kinds. We have rolling start, mass start, and wave start. So most triathlons don't start everyone at the same time. The rolling start is a format where athletes start in small groups usually. It could even be one at a time, but usually it's up to six people start, and then 5 seconds later, six more people start, 5 seconds later, six more people start, and so on. And this reduces the chaos of the swim start that you would have in a mass start. It spreads out the field, and the timings are managed by using timing chips, so you still get your correct finish time. Similar to what you would in a big city marathon, your chip starts when you cross the actual starting mat. A mass start, on the other hand, is when all the athletes start at the same time, usually with a horn or a gun. And this used to be more common, and it was pretty epic, but it was also pretty crowded and chaotic, and lots of contact between swimmers, the proverbial washing machine. So it's kind of being phased out, and I don't know a lot of races that use them. But wave starts happen. In wave starts, you have different groups of athletes that start a few minutes apart. So it's a split mass start in a way. You might have waves organized by, for example, age group or estimated swim time or anything else really, but these waves could be pretty small, similar to a rolling start, like 5 to 10 athletes going off at a time. But they could also be quite big, so a couple of hundred athletes, depending on the race. So you might have 200 a so-called mass start of 200 athletes, except it's a wave start because you might have 10 waves of 200 athletes going off rather than 2,000 athletes going off at the same time. So that's why I would call a wave start a split mass start. Now, a split is your time for each individual discipline in the results sheet of an event. So your bike split, your run split, your swim split. And then abbreviations, DNS, DNF, DQ, did not start, did not finish, disqualified. Again, abbreviations that you'll see in the results sheet of an event. And I think that that covers the basics. There are plenty more terms that you'll pick up as you get more involved in the sport, but this will get you through the first few races and training sessions as you get started. Now, let me share a personal beginner triathlon story, or as much as I can remember of it anyway, because it's been a long time and my memory of it is actually very hazy. Not for any particular reason. I had no concussion. There was no alcohol involved or anything. My first triathlon wasn't an official race, but it was a group event organized by the local triathlon club. And I was, I'm pretty sure, 17 years old at that time. I was a football or a soccer player for all my youth. And so I was sporty and I was fit for football, but I had no endurance training background or any background in swimming, biking, or running. I was definitely capable of moving forward while swimming and cycling. And of course, running was quite natural to me, as you have to do that in football. But yeah, it was my first triathlon. I didn't do any training for it at all, other than the football training, if you count that. I'm from Finland, and this race was in cold water in Finland. So I used an old windsurfing wetsuit that I had at home, because I used to do a little bit of windsurfing and wakeboarding at a super recreational level. But I had that wetsuit, and it was terrible for swimming, because it's not designed for the mobility you need while actually swimming. But it got the job done, so I wasn't cold in the water, and I could get from point A to point B. I don't remember much from the swim, but I do remember that it was very choppy and it took a very long time. I don't know how long time, because there are no results from this event. I didn't have any Garmin. I don't think I knew what a Garmin was. So there was no watch or data. A Garmin, by the way, this is the beginner series, if you don't know it, is a brand. They create GPS watches, among other things. And usually, when I say Garmin, I don't mean it has to be that brand. It could be a Wahoo or a Polar or a Suunto. But yeah, any GPS watch that you can use to capture your training data or racing data, that wasn't something that I was aware of at that time. Onto the bike, and I had borrowed my dad's bike, which was a city bike, but a slightly better city bike than my own commuter. Flat pedals and running shoes, no bike shoes, no clipping in. I just got myself around the 40 kilometers without too much issue, although I think it was very windy, so I felt that it was challenging at times. But yeah, pretty uneventful bike. I had fun. I enjoyed it. Then the run, which was my comfort zone of the three, not because of any run training, but just from running on the football field. And my memories here, again, are very vague, but I do remember getting absolutely terrible cramps at some point into the run. And I don't remember exactly what happened. Somehow I finished, I know. But I think I was stopped for quite a while trying to stretch the cramps away, and it wasn't working very well. I think I managed, but yeah, it might have been a jog walk into the finish, or I just had to run very gingerly. Anyway, that I do remember those cramps being absolutely horrible. So that was, and it was one of the first times that I experienced cramps that bad. Which actually, yeah, this might be related to what I'm going to talk about next, which is the nutrition hydration. So I'm not sure if I had any. I might have had some water on the bike, but I'm not confident I did. But if I did, I would have at most brought one bottle. So that would have been a 750ml or 24-ounce bottle of water, at most, possibly smaller, if I did bring anything. I certainly didn't have any carbohydrates or electrolytes, and yeah, nowhere near enough fluid. So that was also, yeah, I was, as you can see, I didn't know what I was doing at all. I managed to get through it, though. It was an Olympic distance, I think I said that already, but so pretty long, and I had no idea how long it took me. Absolutely no idea. It would be really fun to know, but I just don't. I stopped playing football shortly after this when I moved away for university. And at that time, I got into running. So it took me actually 7 years until I did my second ever triathlon. But then when I did that second triathlon, I got properly hooked. And today, coaching triathlon is what I do for a living, not racing, but coaching. So I'm not racing for a living, that is, to clarify. The message of this story is that you probably don't have to buy anything to do your first triathlon. You might not even need to train, although I certainly would recommend training, because I'm not sharing my story as a recommendation of what to do. But I'm just sharing it as it's possible to do it even though you don't know what you're doing and you don't have any gear. I certainly didn't train anything for swimming, biking, and running. I certainly didn't do any research. I didn't know what I was doing other than swimming, biking, and running itself. But to be, on the flip side, I was 17 and sporty and relatively fit generally, even if I didn't have that much endurance. So my baseline is obviously different than others. And it is helpful to avoid some of the very basic mistakes I could have easily avoided and to do training to be more prepared and to do preparation to be more prepared. And these are some of the things that we'll get to in the coming episodes and what the purpose of this series is. So here's a call to action for everybody, whether you're a beginner or a seasoned athlete. I would like to feature other personal stories, beginner stories in this series. So whether you are, wherever you are in your journey, if you have an interesting, funny, educational, inspirational, any kind of personal story you'd be happy for me to share on the podcast that other listeners might be interested in hearing, like the one that I share for myself, please email it to me on michael@scientifictriathlon.com. You can find my email in the episode description. It's Michael with a K. And I'll be very happy to share it. It'll be interesting to hear other people's stories. And I think it'll be helpful for other listeners, for other people that are maybe haven't even done their first triathlon yet. Now let's get into some common questions and misconceptions. And then we'll start to wrap up. We're getting close to the finish here. So the first one that I want to address is, I'm not a strong swimmer. Can I still do triathlon? And swimming is probably the biggest barrier in triathlon, I would guess. I don't have any statistics on it, but it can be intimidating. It's not something that everybody knows how to do to a level that they're comfortable with or do at all. But you are allowed to do breaststroke, backstroke, swim in whatever way you feel the most comfortable. You can mix freestyle or front crawl with breaststroke or backstroke. There are lots of safety measures in place with kayaks, stand-up paddleboards, etc., to make sure everyone is safe. You should, of course, train and be prepared so that you are confident you can cover the distance. But in case something happens, you get tired, you have a panic attack, you'll be able to just grab onto a kayak or similar and rest and then continue. If you don't move, you are allowed to continue to swim. If you need to get helped, you will be able to get helped and get out of the water. And I've seen people who were terrified of the swim because of whatever reason, afraid of the open water, afraid that they wouldn't be able to cover the distance. But within a few months of consistent practice, they were very confident. And even if swimming remains your weakest discipline, it's also the shortest one in a triathlon. So it just doesn't matter as much as the bike and the run. But don't worry about the swim. You'll be able, with some consistent practice, to get confident and get through the race. And remember, there are lots of safety measures in place, so you will be safe in the swim. Number two here, do I need to be in better shape before I can start training for a triathlon? No, you do not. This is a backwards thinking because you get in shape by training for triathlon. You don't get in shape to train for triathlon. So start where you are now with what you can do today and build from there. Number three, is triathlon expensive? It can be very expensive if you let it be, but it doesn't have to be. The equipment requirements to get started are modest, as we discussed before, and you can save a lot by the right race selection. So basically race locally, so you can sleep in your own bed, save money on race registration and on accommodation, and at the same time support local small businesses and triathlon events in your local area. So it's a great double whammy. This is also a great gateway to getting to know the people in your local community. And this way, you might even be able to buy things secondhand from other triathletes or borrow things. So it can really become helpful for you to keep the costs down. But I think that, travel and race registrations are among the biggest costs associated with triathlons. So if you can race locally, that helps a lot. The bike is the other big one, but you can get started on any bike, as we talked about, so you shouldn't rush the process of moving up to a better and more expensive bike. Number four is, I don't have time to train for three different sports. So this is a common obstacle or a common concern, but remember that triathlon training isn't about being a swimmer and a runner and a cyclist. It's about being a triathlete. It's integrated. So a lot of the fitness you build in one sport helps the others. And especially if you're training for the shorter distances, which is what I recommend, for you when you're starting out anyway, regardless of how much time you have available, the time commitment is very manageable. I think I mentioned it above. For a sprint distance, to complete sprint distance, 45 to 60 minutes, four, five, six times a week. You can, four as a more on the low end, six times would be amazing. You can get a long way on that. Right, the next one is training has to be hard and painful to be effective, and I'm not ready for the pain. So this couldn't be further from the truth. Most of the training should actually feel relatively easy and conversational, basically. So you should be able to hold a conversation if you needed to in most of your training. There will, of course, be some harder sessions, but they're the minority, and especially when you're starting out, you don't really need to specifically do too much of that type of work. Definitely, one thing that I can say for sure is that if every training session leaves you exhausted and dreading the next one, you're doing way too much intensity, too much hard work too soon, and you'll likely burn out or get injured. You can and should be confident that even if you're just getting out the door and doing some conversational running, conversational cycling and swimming, you're actually building a lot of fitness. This stops being the case when you get closer to your fitness potential, but now just easy training will give you a lot because it's a new thing. It's a new stimulus compared to what you were doing before. That said, in the beginner stages, sometimes it's also just not possible to make training feel actually easy because it takes a bit of fitness to get to the point where you can run easily, especially. Running is the hardest one. And swimming too, to be fair, but that's more of a technical limitation than a fitness limitation. But that's okay. You don't have to worry if it feels moderately hard, even when you want to be going easy. The main point is that the intention in a lot of training should be to hold back and go as easy as possible for your current fitness. And it might still feel moderately hard, but at least it doesn't feel excruciatingly hard. And within just a few short weeks, as long as you keep holding back so that you're trying to make it as easy as possible, that will start to become actually truly easy within not too long. But in running as well, you can do things like alternating jogging with walking. So 1 minute jog, 1 minute walk. And that can help you with things like keeping your heart rate down and keeping the overall effort level quite low. Now, the next question or concern is, am I too old or too young to start triathlon? So age group triathlon has categories from 18, so adults, to over 80 years old. And it is welcoming to people of all ages. Very welcoming, I should say. And the variety of training for three different sports make it much less likely to have an overuse injury compared to if you were to say only run, so or even only bike or only swim. You could argue that the running is still a bigger risk, but as long as you manage the running injury risk, then triathlon is a very low risk sport compared to a single sport where you put a lot more load through any single joint or muscle group compared to the variety you have in triathlon. So an injury is one of the biggest risks in older triathletes, overuse injury included. So the way that the variety allows you to manage that is a really good one. And it means that, no, you're not too old. You can do a relatively small amount of any one discipline to reduce the risk of injury, but still be fit by doing the other sports and still get through and perform well in triathlons. Okay, just two more questions. The next one is, what if I'm last? So this is not about your finishing position. It's about the personal challenge. Everyone who finishes gets the same medal, the same t-shirt. The person who finishes last likely finds the race the biggest challenge, the biggest personal challenge. So rightly so, they are the ones that might get the greatest sense of accomplishment. So you get actually more reward for your effort. And the triathlon community is incredibly supportive. I hear from people coming into triathlon from other sports, especially sports like road cycling, that is just completely different. It's not a gated community like others. It is very supportive in general, very welcoming. And you'll often find that people at the back of the pack are getting the most support and cheers. And also the oldest participants tend to get a lot of the cheers, whether they're at the back of the pack or in the middle or at the front. The older participants get a lot of cheers, to come back to the previous question about age. So don't worry about being last. Somebody has to be last. It's about your challenge. It's about trying to become a better version of yourself and achieve something, achieve a challenge, and focus on the process. Over time, you will become a lot better if you stick with it, but that doesn't have to be the main goal. It's just about achieving a personal challenge, really. And the final one, the final question or misconception, do I need to track all my data and have detailed training plans before I start? And I would say again, no, you don't. Many beginners get overwhelmed before they even begin, but you really don't need a power meter, heart rate zones, detailed periodization, or complex training software to start triathlon. Focus on building consistency and enjoyment in all three sports first. And the data and detailed planning can come later if you want it, but many triathletes keep things simple throughout their entire journey, and that is equally fine. If you keep following along with this series, you will know all you need to know at the early stages of your own journey, but you can start your journey now, today, without looking ahead, without waiting for the rest of the episodes. I'll give you some tips now, because now we move on to the next segment, which is where to go from here. And if this episode has got you interested in trying triathlon, here's what I'd suggest as your next steps. First, think about your why behind wanting to do a triathlon. What is it that excites you about it? Is it a vehicle to get fit and healthy? Is it a challenge that lies outside of your comfort zone? Is it the variety in training for three sports that appeals to you? Is it a dream of one day completing a bucket list challenge like an Ironman? Understanding your why will be useful both for motivation and also for making good decisions every step on the way that align with what you're doing the sport for. Second, see if there is a local community of triathletes where you live. The social aspect of triathlon is huge, and training with others will make the whole process more enjoyable and will give you people to ask questions. You can send me questions to answer on the podcast, and I want you to do that. I'll get to that later. But you might also be able to get into a group, and you can go on rides with people and ask them questions all the time. You can get a lot out of training with other people, and you might also be able to borrow and test equipment for your first races from others in the community. And it's just a fact of having other friends that do the same thing as you do. It's just fun. So see if there is a local community. Try to get involved in that. Third, assess where your swim, bike, and run is right now. This isn't about doing testing. It's more about, you know, how long can you run for or swim for or bike for? Do you think you're able to complete a sprint distance right now? Do you need to train? Is it one discipline that is weaker than another? Think about appropriate short to medium term goals that are appropriate for your level right now. And we'll talk more about this in the next episode, but race selection is what will come next. Signing up for an Ironman off the bat is usually not a good decision in my mind. The best thing you can do when getting started tends to be to seek out and do as many sprints and super sprints as you can. And you probably only need 2 months to get ready for a sprint distance, right? Even if you're not at all fit to start with. So look at local or semi-local races that you could do in that time frame, because having something on the kind of short to medium term time frame will also help with motivation. It will help keep you motivated. And then start training, even if you don't know how yet. We talked about it a little bit. It doesn't have to be hard all the time. It shouldn't be hard all the time. A lot of the training should be easy. So just go out there and swim, bike, and run. And the key thing is consistency. It doesn't have to be every day, but try to commit to a schedule, whether it's committing to 3, 4, 5, or 6 workouts per week. They don't have to be long. You don't have to go hard. Just go out and cover some distance at an easy to moderate effort if you can. And we'll talk more about the specifics of training, but in appropriate level of detail, so not too much, just the relevant for this stage of your journey in the upcoming episodes. And finally, remember that triathlon is supposed to be fun. And while it is challenging and it requires some commitment, if you're not enjoying the process, then you need to change the process to make it enjoyable. So that's the key thing. Triathlon is fun and it should be fun, and you can make it fun. So never forget that. Okay, so before we wrap up, quick reminder, a couple of reminders. First, subscribe to this series if you aren't subscribed to the podcast. So you can subscribe to the series, you can subscribe to the podcast. So do that, and then you'll see and get yourself on those notifications if you aren't already, so that you'll see the episodes when they are released. And follow along on Instagram. When I post new episodes, I'll also publish there. So do that so you can follow along and don't miss any episodes. Secondly, as I mentioned, I want to hear from you. If you're new to triathlon or thinking about getting started, send me your questions or email or Instagram. It could be any questions, things you're worried about, or things that feel overwhelming, things that you would like me to cover in future episodes for this series beyond the planned episodes I already listed. And if you have a triathlon story to share, a beginner triathlon story to share, I'd love to hear it. And this goes whether you're a beginner still or whether you're a seasoned athlete. But let's hear some real stories from real people. Even if your story resonates with only one person, that might be exactly what they need to hear to take the first step. So it could make all the difference for that one person, and that is meaningful. So you can reach me at michael@scientifictriathlon.com, and that's Michael with a K, or you can send me a DM on Instagram at scientifictriathlonhq. All right, now, as a reminder, or if you're new here, you can find the detailed show notes for this episode. So that is a written summary on scientifictriathlon.com/beginner1. So that will be the URL pattern for the beginner series episodes, beginner one, beginner two, etc. In the next episode, we'll talk about selecting your first race. So I'll see you then. That is the next episode of this series, but we might have some other episodes on the podcast before that. And to learn more about what we do at Scientific Triathlon, visit scientifictriathlon.com. And if you like the podcast, a 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts or Spotify would be amazing. It helps other people find the show, and it helps me dedicate time to keep going with the podcast, get the beginner series done more quickly. So there's incentive for you to do that. I really appreciate it if you do. So thank you so much. And thank you to everybody who has already reviewed the podcast and given 5-star ratings. We do have a lot of them, but we can always use more. Finally, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. If you're looking for high quality, practical, and tasty fueling and hydration products, make sure to try Precision Fuel and Hydration. And don't forget to take 15% off your first order with the code TTS25. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.